portion. We go round the country to Columbia, South Carolina. My guest is Dr. Robert Leslie, and the name of his book is Angels in the ER. Dr. Leslie, welcome today to our program.
Well, thank you, Lillian. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I have just finished reading your book. In fact, just moments ago, turned the last page. I had to read every word. And some books I get, I don't read every word. But yours is absolutely one that a person cannot put down. In fact, my husband last night thought that I was in La La Land somewhere because I was buried into your book and just enjoying it so very much.
Thank you.
Some parts are extremely enjoyable, hilarious even. Others are very disturbing, and you take a person on an emotional roller coaster here. So I just want to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's
Thank you.
Great writing. Is this your first book?
It is. It's the first book I've had published.
Okay. Well, are you going to do another one?
Well, yes, I would like to.
Okay.
And I have something in mind.
All right. Good. Good. Very good for us. Angels in the ER. You begin your book by writing, I have come to believe there are angels in our midst. Now, this comes from 25 years in the ER, emergency room. I guess we should state that. Is that right, Doctor?
Yes. Yes. And I mentioned that in the first of the book, but on the very last page, I quote Thomas Aquinas when he said, we are like children who stand in the need of masters to enlighten us and direct us. And God has provided for this by appointing his angels to be our teachers and guides. And I think that does sum up where I go in this book. That indeed, I have experienced these angels, and they are teachers and they are guides.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some of these, as I said, some are a few are doctors. A lot of them are nurses, but most of them are patients and their family members, and there are additionally, they are, in my experience, are some supernatural helpers.
Wow. And we can certainly, after reading the book, see where you come from in all that. Do you hear wings and see halos?
I don't. sometimes I think I do.
Oh, really?
I think some of the people that I've come in contact with, I really have to look closely because I'm sure there's a halo there somewhere in their wings. But they're not floating around the department necessarily.
Okay. It's not a common occurrence, but something that really stands out when it does happen.
Yes, and I don't think there's any question. There is no question in my mind that the Lord does provide at the right time in the right place if we just listen and believe that he does provide helpers for us.
Well, Dr. Leslie, I will say that a few times, too many, but just a few times, I have been in the emergency room myself as a patient. You write the ER is a difficult and challenging place to be, both for patients and for those of us who care for them. And I will say that in every situation, I have received the very best of care.
Good.
And I can say that I am glad for those angels in the ER. I cannot imagine those. Who are working there, serving there, ministering there, doing that day after day, night after night. But it takes a certain kind of person, and you've seen these people down through the years, have you not?
I certainly have, and it's a different place to work. It's a great place to work, but it does require a different sort of person. And The most dedicated people and professionals that I've come across in my professional life have been in the emergency department, and we've become a family.
Yeah,
there are bonds forged there with the staff that endure forever.
Well, you speak of one of these. In fact, I find him throughout the book. Now, I don't know how long he served with you, whether he still does or not, but tell us about Jeff Ryan.
Well, he's one of my favorite characters.
I can tell.
he he's a male nurse, which is a little bit unusual in the Southeast, and or it certainly was 25 years ago.
Yeah, not so much anymore, I don't think.
Right, not anymore. Mm-hmm. But 25 years ago, it was a little bit unusual. But Jeff is and still is an ER nurse, but very capable and a big, burly fella, sort of intimidating in his looks. But once you realize, I mean, he had a heart of just a huge heart, and when you saw him with children, I think I demonstrated that in the book. When he's with young children, he is very tender. Kids just immediately respond to him because they sense, as they often do, who likes him, who cares for him, mm-hmm. and Jeff certainly does that. Has always done that. On the other side of that coin. And in one of the cases presented, he was our enforcer. I never worried. He usually worked at night. And I never worried when he was on duty in the department. Number one, he always made good judgments. When he said, Robert, you need to come see this fella, I knew I needed to go see a fella.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if people got out of line, I knew Barry was going to be behind me.
Well, He certainly did one particular time, and we're not going to go into that today, but it's just hilarious, some of the stories that you tell here. But I want to get into something else first. Two things stood out for me that I realized as I read your book, really hadn't thought about it before and no reason to, but something that I've learned. How much part alcohol plays in the people that come was one, and the other was recurring or regular patients. I hadn't thought about that sort of thing, but patients who become regulars in the ER. Interesting. First of all, would you speak to the subject of alcohol abusers?
Well, you're exactly right. That is a recurrent theme, unfortunately, in the emergency department, And alcohol is a real problem. It's a problem in our society, certainly. But in the emergency department, alcohol blurs our ability to make good decisions, on one hand. And so we're doing things and saying things that we would never do if we were sober. So people get into fights. They get into arguments. One particularly tragic occurrence was I think he was 15 years old, the boy who was drunk and slugged his mother and broke her jaw in the emergency department.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen assaults like that before of parents. Fortunately, not all that common, but when it happens, it is absolutely tragic. And then the other aspect of alcohol is what it does to your ability to walk and to drive. And it is absolutely amazing the people that are involved in auto accidents that can't stand up. That's one of the, I had one of my boys in the emergency room with me one evening. I wanted to demonstrate to him, it was an object lesson that he needed at this point in his life. And I was sewing up a fellow who'd been in a fight, and my boy was watching, and he was a teenager. My son was at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the patient could not walk across the room. He could not stand up, and it made a significant impression on my son that this fella had been in a fight but actually drove himself to the emergency room, and it scared my boy senseless that here is a fella who's out on the road driving. So alcohol is a very common problem in the emergency department, and it really shows, I think, some of the human condition in that it strips us of our abilities to make good judgment, to think clearly, and we do things that we would never do if we were in our right mind.
And then you spoke of the man, I think you called him Slim,
right,
who was in and out all the time.
Right.
Definitely abused alcohol. It was a way of life with him, but he had no one, no place to live, and he used the emergency room as a matter of consolation, a place to get a warm meal. You write very compassionately about Slim.
Well, Slim was a favorite of ours, and sometimes we would be really busy, and then Slim would come in by ambulance, and we would quickly assess him and realize that he was not in any in these significant distress. And then we would, you know, we had to move on quickly to other patients that were in need of our attention. But there was always, Slim always, you know, there was a warm spot in the hearts for Slim. He was never malicious. There was always a thinly disguised need for human touch, human companionship. And we were the only people really in the community that would provide that.
Mm-hmm.
Slim's gone now, and it's, and when I learned he did not die in the emergency department, he didn't come in, he died on the street somewhere, and it saddened all of us.
Right.
So, but we do have ER regulars. Some of them are like Slim, but some of them, you know, they're drug abusers, people who come in and trying to, you know, to get narcotics on a regular basis. And some of them are homeless people with no other place to go. So, and some of those people have, you know, they become, when members of the ER staff sit down and talk away from the ER, a lot of times we talk about the regulars and the experiences we've had with them.
Almost like part of your family,
yeah.
Too.
I had one instance. I was driving home from church with my kids, and one of my daughters said, "Daddy, be careful, because there was a fella coming up behind me, drifted. It was a four-lane road, drifted into my lane and hit me in the back of the car. He drifted, just boom, and just completely careless." So we pulled over, and it was a fellow named Tommy. And Tommy was an ER regular. We saw him usually when his blood alcohol was way elevated. I knew he didn't have a job, and I doubted if he had insurance. And I said, "Tommy, what in the world?" It's Sunday afternoon, and he was drunk. And sure enough, the police came. Tommy didn't have any insurance. But next time I saw him in the emergency room, he apologized for running into me. And we always sort of shared a laugh about that. Nobody was hurt. It was just a minor fender bender.
But it could have been a whole lot worse.
It could have been a whole lot worse.
And you had your children with you.
I did. And that bothered me. And I had a few words with him.
Yeah.
But he was a good soul.
He was a good soul, but he drank, and that changed everything.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah, the Slim and Tommy, ER regulars, I think of the sisters there toward the back of your book, too.
Right.
Who came in. Tell us about an ER abuser.
Well, one of the cases I present, it was late at night, a young man comes in and tells me that he has bone cancer. And he has an x-ray, and he needs something for pain. And these abusers, we call them ER abusers, they're there for pain medicine. They want something, narcotics. They'd like to have a prescription. Some of them just want a shot of something, but they like a prescription is more valuable. They can alter it, or they can get it filled and then sell narcotics. But this particular person said he had bone cancer, showed me his x-ray, and indeed it was an x-ray of a femur, a thigh bone, with what was obviously a bone cancer in the middle of it. But there was no identification. Where normally the name is put on the x-ray, it had been cut away, and it was wrinkled, and, you know, it was obviously an old x-ray. And also, this bad a tumor in the thigh bone, something would have had to happen to it. Either he would no longer be alive, or it had to have been removed, but this guy walked in. So I knew he was up to, he was up to no good. And I was a little bit perturbed because he sort of underestimated me and that I would fall for this. So when I confronted him with it, he got mad and he left. And if you remember in the book, I followed him in the parking lot because I was really upset. I wanted to get that x-ray back. And it was a crazy thing on my part as he reached into his pocket.
Now let me interrupt you here just a moment, Dr. Leslie. Why was it important for you to get that x-ray and destroy it?
On two points. Number one, so that I wanted to destroy that so he wouldn't continue to use that to try to get narcotics.
At another ER.
Mm-hmm. But the second point and the overriding point was it was absolutely the wrong reason, and that was my pride. I didn't want, you know, here he'd come in and tried to pull one over on us, and, you know, he was not supposed to do that. So I was going to get that x-ray and put an end to it. which is not very smart.
You were going to show him. You were going to put him in his place.
I'm only human.
And rightly so.
Right.
Yes, yes. So what happened in the parking lot?
Well, I hollered at him, and he turned around, and he saw it was me, and he was about 50 feet away or so, and it was dark. It was night, but there was a light out there. But he clearly reached into his pocket and pulled something out of his pocket. And I don't know whether it was a knife. I don't know whether it was a gun. It could have been a picture of his mother, but I didn't think so.
Not likely.
But I realized then.
It was metallic. You could see that.
Something glittered, and yeah. I thought, this is sort of crazy.
Yeah.
So I just went back inside. I didn't want to. It was not worth it.
Mm. Oh, well, all kinds of experiences such as that. I can see in many cases where you could become angry and want to right the situation. What is an important virtue to have, if you will, in situations such as this? Because they happen it's very, very common for such things to happen in your situation. What's important here?
Well, I think it would be patience and self-control. And those are, patience is a difficult virtue to master in the ER. And I think one of my quotes in there is, it takes a lot of patience to learn patience.
Yeah.
and that is absolutely true. But I think self-control, that's an interesting question you asked, Lillian, yesterday. One of my staff members who just read the book asked me about one of these cases with a shaken baby, where the
yes.
child had been shaken to the point where he died, and they asked me, how could you stand there? Why didn't you grab, this person who did this? What was going through your mind? And indeed, you become very angry, and there's no question you become very angry. And that, you have to learn to overcome that and understand what your role is. We're not judges. We're there to take care of the patient, take care of the family members. Now we get law enforcement involved.
Mm-hmm.
We can do those things.
And they take care of them. That's their place.
Right.
Their place.
They're going to be the judges on this earth. And so we let them do that. But that takes a lot of self-control.
Yes.
To step back and say, what can I do here? What should I do here? And this is not my place. But yes, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of wondering how in the world someone could do this to a child. And then over time, you don't become hardened to that, and you don't become cynical.
Oh, I hope not.
No, but you do begin to realize that we are fallen, and that we as humans, we do a lot of bad things. So, I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does.
That's one of the hardest things to learn to do.
I particularly wanted you to address that today so that we could understand some of the things that you and other medical care people have to face and go through. You are the caregivers. You are the doctors, the nurses. You fulfill your role, your place, and leave the rest of it to whoever is designated to take care of that part of it.
Yeah.
We're speaking today on Round the Country with Dr. Robert Leslie. His book is Angels in the ER. Your book is available now. I know it's just newly out, Dr. Leslie.
Yes.
It's published by Harvest House Publishers and available, I'm sure, online at Amazon.com and other online bookstores. Is it available in local bookstores yet?
Well, it is in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Then in some of the Christian bookstores, Shepherd's Fold here in town, I think Books A Million is going to have it. You can get it directly through Harvest House, but Amazon has it as well.
All right. If you go to your Christian bookstore friends, you can ask them to order it from Harvest House. Of course, it's available there if they do not have it. I can't imagine that they wouldn't have it. It's such a fabulous book. I'm sure that many, many people are going to be touched. And not only that, but educated. I wanted to talk to you about other angels. Now, We know there's two kinds of angels in this world. There are the angels from heaven, the ones that we love to think about and talk about, and you have actually experienced, and many other people. But have you? There are also fallen angels. Have you ever experienced the presence of an otherworldly angel while working in the ER?
Well, if you're referring to forces of evil, I think that's what you're asking about.
Yes, that's right.
Absolutely, and I mentioned I write about the lady that came in that had torn her tongue out. Now she was mentally ill. But her mental illness was manifested by thinking that she heard voices telling her to do and to say terrible things. And so she was determined that that was not going to happen. And she actually tore her tongue out with her fingernails, completely removed her tongue with her fingernails.
Mm.
And at the same time, if you remember, she had a towel on the top of her head to keep the voices from speaking to her.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very disconcerting episode, because you realize that that there are spirits out there, and there are forces that are working against the forces of good. And it's interesting, as I talk to missionaries that I've come to know in developing countries, they are convinced that there's much more manifestation of these evil spirits than there is in this country, which I think is an interesting observation.
Mm-hmm.
These people are convinced of that. But I think still in this country, I know in South Carolina, we still see that. And that was a pretty flagrant example for me.
Probably pretty scary too, wasn't it?
Well, it was scary.
Yeah,
and it was a little scary to me. And
yeah.
as I described the security guard, he was scared to death. This woman was pointing at him and making gestures, and he got out of her line of sight because he was convinced that he was going to be cursed in some way.
Yeah, that in a way it was humorous. In the real sense, it definitely was not, because
no.
It really, really happened. Well, Dr. Leslie, you know, we've all been here. When all you're wearing is an open-backed hospital gown,
right,
it matters not your standing in the community. And you have some hilarious stories to tell about how the ER is the great leveler of personages. And probably on the air, we probably shouldn't get into those stories. But I just wanted to tell you that I laughed out loud when I read those stories.
Oh, good.
Interesting, funny, but for some of those people, not very pleasant, I'm sure.
Right.
All right. Tell us about rule number one.
Let's see.
Do you remember rule number one?
You'll have to help me, Lillian.
Okay. Don't let anyone get between you and the door.
Oh, that's right. Well, see, we have several rule number ones in the ER, but that
which
is
one?
that is absolute. That's self-preservation rule number one.
Okay. All right.
And those. You know, again, another staff member asked me yesterday, she said, I never thought about it, that it was dangerous working in the ER. I mean, sometimes we hear about people coming in and shooting, but that a family member or a patient would ever attack the physician because of bad news. But this is, it happens enough that we need to be careful of it. And then I describe a couple instances in the book. Actually, my partner lost a couple teeth in the same sort of circumstance. But in the book, I do talk about staying, you know, between the patient and the door so that you can make an exit if you have to. You never know how people are going to respond. And in the ER, we are telling total strangers that the loved one has had a heart attack and may not survive, or that they were in a terrible accident and they are not they have died. They're no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
And people respond in different ways, and the first response is shock and denial, and then to lash out, and who better to lash out at than here's a stranger usually in front of them who's just giving them that bad news.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the friend of mine that I describe in the book forgot that and paid a significant price when he was trapped in the room with a young man who was out of control when he learned that his wife was dead.
A very large young man.
Yes.
Yeah, very powerful one.
Yes, and of course, then I describe what happens to me not too long after that.
That's the funny one.
Yeah, I'm surrounded by some big old boys that I don't know how they're going to respond. But that was an amazing moment, too, when I realized that it was okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Because they took it in the spirit in which it was given and
right.
and had no thought of attacking you, but instead thanked you very,
right.
very graciously. Thanked you for your help and everything you had done. But you felt trapped at the time, didn't you?
Because you'd forgotten that rule. That was a sinking feeling when
yeah.
I realized where I was, and I can only think of my friend and what happened to him. And that's why the sudden swing in emotion when they thanked me, and it was such a relief.
What part of the book, Dr. Leslie, is really your favorite part? Do you have a favorite part or a particular closing word for our listeners here from your book?
I do. I have several, but the part that that is the most meaningful to me, if you remember, when I'm upstairs to pronounce a patient dead,
yes,
and I think I'm by myself, and you know, I go in and I check, make sure he's not breathing, and there's no pulse. And I'm making a note on the chart. And his son, who's sitting in the shadow of the room, speaks out and begins asking me questions. And we talk about faith. And then I share with him some stories, a couple episodes, instances with my father, and the experiences that I had with my father. And one of the most meaningful to me is when I talked to him about the letter that Daddy wrote me when I was in medical school. And I was discouraged, and he wrote an amazing letter to me. And then I found it 20 years later, and Daddy was dead. But I was in another circumstance that I needed guidance, and that letter spoke to me in a whole new way. But absolutely, Daddy was in a room talking to me.
Mm.
You know, again, you know, through that letter. So that's one of the most important, that's one of my favorite passages.
Yeah, that's one of the most heartwarming stories in the whole book, and there are plenty of them. Well, Dr. Leslie, our time is up. I certainly appreciate it. The time has gone much too quickly, but I hope we've given people a taste of your book, Angels in the ER. Again, the author is Robert D. Leslie. That's Lesslie. And a fantastic book. We thank you for your time that you spent with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Lily. This has been a great time, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm glad you read the book and your comments.
Oh, well, I always read the book. It's important. But I especially enjoyed this one, and please stay on the line as Kevin will speak with you in just a moment. And friends, we thank you for joining us for this interview.